Okay, we're going to head over now and speak to Matthew Kimberley. Good afternoon, Matthew. How are you?
Good afternoon, Dave. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
That's great. You're in Malta, is that right?
I am. Sunny Malta.
Yeah.
The sun is shining, just the other side of the Mediterranean to you, I think.
Lovely stuff. You're from Malta originally? Where are you from? Where are you hawking from?
Originally from Eastbourne, south coast of the UK.
Yeah, fantastic. Yes, we've got listeners in Eastbourne, I can tell you that much. We know we have. Well, it's great to have you on, Matthew. And this, I can't obviously mention the full title of the book, which has probably caused you a few issues at different places, what I like about the book is it's straight talking, because I think sometimes, and maybe, I'm not sure, I don't want to sound bad here, but maybe a lot of the American books, a little bit fluffy, and I like the Britishness of this. It's kind of straight to the point.
Absolutely. I read a book the other day that told me I needed to get angels involved in my well-being.
An awful lot
of getting in touch with your spiritual self, channeling your inner woo, and not nearly enough about taking responsibility for yourself.
I'm surprised you haven't already sorted that out, actually, Matthew, but there you are. I know exactly what you mean, because you hear about crystals and chakras, and there will be people who are all into that listening to us today and getting annoyed right now at the fact that we're not going to be talking about that. But I know... I'm a pastor of a church, I know from other aspects of speaking to people, a lot of it's about common sense and picking yourself up and getting on with it.
Absolutely, and we've kind of come full circle, because a lot of the original self-help literature was good, it was solid. It told you that you had to wake up early, you had to take care of your body, you had to take care of your mind, you had to look out for other people. And yet we've gone almost to the other extreme now, where there are secrets, apparently, that are encoded in the universe, and you have to ascend to another level of enlightenment in order to access them. And that's quite dangerous. That's almost a delegation of responsibility away from yourself to the universe. Trust the universe, for sure, but do your due diligence.
And, of course, it's a good money spinner as well, I suppose, isn't it? You know, I've got the secret, if you want to know what it is. You know,
absolutely right. The more you can confuse somebody, the more likely they are to pay you to help them with their confusion.
Is the issue as well that as we're speaking today, there will be those listening to us who are suffering from medical depression and diagnosed real issues that they're facing in their life, anxiety issues and so on, which I don't pretend to be an expert on at all. And so when you say pull yourself together, get yourself sorted, that can be taken wrongly in a situation like that, and I don't think that's what you're getting at here, is it?
Well, it's a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up, Dave. You know, nothing happens in a vacuum. When you take responsibility for yourself, you take responsibility to your community as well. And community is super important. It's what keeps us sane, I think. It's what keeps us together. It's the interaction of responsible humans with each other that is important, so that when sometimes through depression or substance abuse or other kinds of addiction, you are not able to give of yourself to the community as fully as you want, other people around you who have also taken responsibility for themselves and those around them can step in and help pull you up. So sure, everybody's battling their own demons, and even us self-help authors have got no end of demons that we're battling. But when everybody realizes that possibly the solution isn't out there, but the solution is within themselves and within other people, they'll be more likely to ask for help when they need it.
I'm not sure whether there's truth or there's kind of an exaggeration going on in our media, excuse me, but we are seeing kind of a breakdown in community and an entrenchment on each side of the political persuasion at the moment, and that must be very dangerous for all our well-beings.
Categorically, there's three basic elements to getting an effing grip. One of them is taking responsibility, but the other one is taking yourself less seriously. And I'm a fatalist. My dad as well, actually, is a pastor in the Church of England, but I'm pretty fatalistic about it. I believe that we've got one shot to make a difference, and if we're deeply entrenched in partisan politics, in name-calling, in side-picking, then it really disallows us. It prevents us from living our best life, because even the people that we have fundamental disagreements with on one element, we're going to find great deal in common with on something else. So I believe we have to look beyond these partisan divisions in order for everybody to enjoy the best time.
And what I like about your stuff here is it's quite straight to the point. And actually, you're not really, with all due respect, like you said earlier, I think as well, you agree with me on this, that you're not telling us anything new. There's no revelatory stuff here, but it's... you're kind of reminding us of why we do what we do, or why we should be doing what we should be doing. Is that a fair take? Because, like you say, there are people out there saying, I've got the secret, but actually, sleeping well and exercising and eating well, amongst the other things that you talk about in the book, is pretty, you know, if you ask people, they probably know that already, don't they?
That's absolutely right. So it's really a rallying call to everybody's best effort.
Yes.
If you've got inside of you everything that you probably need, you can become confused by reading too much, by learning too much, by absorbing too much, by listening to too many people. But at our very essence, we understand what is good for us and what is bad for us. We understand what's good for our mental health, the kind of situations that make us feel better in the long term, not just getting buzzed, and things that make us feel worse in the long term. And unless you're a particle physicist or some kind of scientific researcher, there's really nothing original out there, especially in the realm of books about how to be a better person. There's no revelation that's going to be coming this year, next year, or in 20 years' time with regards to being a decent human being. So you do know it, but like being told to go to the gym, it doesn't hurt if we get reminded about it once in a while.
And this is the thing for me, I'm going to be lay my cards on the table. I go through phases where I lose weight and I feel good and I'm exercising, and then I get out of the habit for whatever reason, and it's flipping difficult to get back into that habit again. And I'm quite happy eating what I want to eat, and I will resent anybody that comes and tells me, because I'm not going to be bossed around by anybody. I'll enjoy what I'm enjoying, thank you very much. But I know deep down inside what you're telling me is true.
Right. And you're not alone, Dave. You know, for me, I might go for a whole month without having a drink, and then I'll congratulate myself with a large pint, yeah. And we're on the slippery slope again. I totally get you. And that's why goals aren't necessarily the best thing. You know, my aim is to lose 10 pounds or 10 stone. My goal is to achieve something by such and such a date. They can be useful, but they're not the most useful. It's the small daily disciplines that are more useful. So if 90% of the time you're eating healthy, then sure, Dave, have that burger.
Yeah. What about to-do lists? I mean, are you into them?
Yeah, for sure. The third tenet of getting a grip is getting better at doing stuff.
Yeah.
So many of us wallow in our own mess. There's no reason that the bed is unmade or the sink is unwashed or the dishes haven't been done for any reason other than we look at this thing to do. It doesn't look attractive. We sigh inside. We say, no, I'm going to have a cup of tea instead. And that, funnily enough, although we may get rewarded by the cup of tea, we end up suffering from the mess in the kitchen and the cockroach infestation that comes as a result of it. So if we can get into the habit of doing, I have an 8-minute rule. If something could be done in less than 8 minutes, just do it. And often it will take 2 minutes, you know, whether that's work, whether that's play, whether that's brushing your teeth or flossing your teeth in the morning, whether it's doing the dishes or not putting the coffee cup next to the bed but putting it in the sink. There's a thousand ways that we can increase our happiness, frankly, by keeping our ship in order. If you're the captain of a ship, you realize that attention to the small disciplines is what stops people getting scurvy and disease.
Yeah. And what I like about your book is that you're straight to the point, as I said earlier, and it's simple as well, because a lot of times I think it's, you know, the diet industry is a multi-billion dollar industry around the world, isn't it? And they complicate things, and I've been on the red and green days and all this sort of stuff. I've done all that, and it's worked to a degree. But basically, I like the way you just say you're fat because your calorie intake outweighs your calorie uptake, sort of thing. So you basically just, it's bottom line. It's simple, isn't it? Really, we know this.
We do, and there's a big difference though between simple and easy. You know, lots of things are simple. It's simple to do 20 push-ups. It's not necessarily easy.
Yeah.
It's simple to get out of the house in time to catch the bus in the morning. But for some people, it's not necessarily easy. So there's a difference between what is simple on paper or what would appear to make common sense and what is actually easy to implement. And again, self-discipline can be trained, even if we don't enjoy getting up early. For the first 5 to 10 mornings that we try it, we'll actually find that we can get used to it. A cold shower, great strategy. If today the thought of a cold shower kills you and you'd rather stay in bed, try it. Try it for 5 seconds at the end of your hot shower, and then try it for 6 seconds, then try it for 10 seconds. So before long, you'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So there's a huge difference between simple and easy. But even the most important concepts that I address in the book are incredibly simple and very, very easy to digest as well.
I also, like you say, you're rubbish at football because you spend more time in the pub than on the pitch. And that's basically, we become professional drinkers, a lot of us, professional socialisers.
It doesn't stop us being football experts, though, does it?
Exactly, yeah. We know a lot about football. We know how it should be done, of course.
Absolutely right.
But what I like about this is one of the chapters is dealing with other people. Don't be so sensitive. I think if there's ever a time we needed a chapter like that or a book like this, because the other day I went to put on Facebook about a political statement, and I put a little character on it because I'm sick of seeing everybody's political statements at the moment. It says that your political posts have made me change my way of thinking, said nobody at all. And for me, it was, and even that caused some people to get offended. So are we living in an oversensitive moment in our society?
Yeah, I'm an old geezer now, so I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to be accused of being unwoke. So I think my opinion probably doesn't count for much. But I do realise that there's two battles I could have chosen when it came to the book. One was getting people to stop offending, and I realized that just weren't going to do it. Too many people are quick to take offense today.
Yeah, yeah.
Too many people are quick to assume that an appropriate punishment for getting somebody's, I don't know, I'm going to dig myself a deeper hole.
No, don't worry about it. It's all right. I'm already in the hole with you. I'm already down there.
Getting somebody's gender wrong, yeah, by accident.
Yeah.
They assume that an appropriate punishment for the wrong pronoun is getting fired from their job. Now, I know and you know that that's disastrous for humanity, but I don't think I can change those people. I don't think I can change this wave of wokeness. But what I can do is appeal to those who are perhaps wondering, should I step into this role of being the defender of everybody's imagined civil liberties? Or can I just not be so sensitive myself?
If
I can deal with myself and enough people deal with themselves, then we might see a larger group of people start to become more tolerant.
Don't you think that there's a vast majority of people who are not bothered in the slightest about some of these things? But of course, they're the quiet majority in a lot of areas. And for me, and what I don't like is that if you say, you know what, there's something I disagree with here, you're automatically thrown onto one, your right wing or your left wing. And I can't stand it when people try and label you and be purely based on one policy or one belief that they automatically say, right, okay, you're that, you're labeled. And that, for me, is the ultimate taking away of civil liberties. We just seem to be getting it all mixed up at the moment.
I'm inclined to agree with you, and I think labels are dangerous, even if you use them yourself. You know, I'd much rather tell you who I am how I identify, about me, rather than how I identify myself. And labels are even bad in a professional context. You know, they're useful eventually, but if you tell somebody, hey, I'm a traffic warden, they're probably not going to like you very much. But when they get to know you as a person, well, the label actually becomes less important. So, yeah, I don't think labeling is super useful, but Dave, I would say that the vocal minority probably do have a duty to speak up. You know, that's been behind many human rights developments in the past. It's the underrepresented who've had to stand on their podium and shout, and they have a duty to stand up for themselves. And then there's the quiet majority may care or may not care. This would be a perfect example, Dave, where both you and I should say, let these people be these people. Let them do what they want to do. And we shall go to the pub and talk about football.
Yeah, I just don't want to turn into Piers Morgan, that's all. As much as I enjoy watching him. Let's talk about health and getting sleep as well. I think that's really, really important. Again, we start the interview with all these extra things, new age stuff. And there's so many tools out there to help you get to sleep now, and aids and medicines and so on. What's your view on all of that?
I think if you really want to appreciate sleep fully, then you have to make sure you've had plenty of kids, because they will ensure that you appreciate the value of sleep in the long term. But I've read various reports, and I don't have any specific data to quote you, but that there's an enormous amount of us all over the Western world who are suffering from a serious sleep deficit, which is almost like wandering around drunk half the time, but without any of the fun benefits. of that. Irritability, yeah. Lack of focus, decreased sex drive, all of these things which are fixable with a very simple solution. Now, the problem is the goggle box. The problem is the screen. The problem is the phone in our hand.
Yeah.
If we were to ban those the minute we walked into our house, and I'm not one for an all-out ban, but I think we could be more mindful of the amount of time we spend looking at screens when you know, do we have to watch one more episode? Could we make the bedroom more inviting?
Yeah.
Could we schedule a nookie date with our other half in order to get us into the bedroom perhaps an hour before we were anticipating? This will have a knock-on effect of fewer car accidents, fewer firings. Sleep is the solution.
We need a lot more sex then, basically, as well.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You know, what it does for endorphins and pheromones. You know, years and years ago, 20 years ago, I read a report that said married couples were spending something like 10 times more time watching television than they were having sex. And it was probably closer to 20 or 30 times, which is not a bad thing. But it adds the cell phone. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day. We were sat around in a group. The average time that we spent looking at our phones each day was 5 hours a day. I don't know about you, Dave, but it takes me 5 minutes to have sex. I think I could do without the phone for 2.5 hours and get all of the health benefits of being sexually useful.
I'm not commenting. My wife's listening. So, whatever I say will be wrong. But no.
I understand.
but I think with all of this, what I like about your book is that you talk about getting yourself right. And actually, what you're saying is that because I think the pressure's sometimes on, and we have the wrong motives. We want to look good for the wrong reasons. And what I like about yours is actually saying, you know what, if you did a bit of exercise, if you get that part of your routine, you'll feel a lot better. If you sleep longer, you'll feel a lot better, and that's what I like about it. And I don't think you're trying to get us to beat ourselves up when we don't get it right as well.
You're right, and I'm not mad keen on ambition either. I think ambition is healthy as long as it's your own. So if you want to get a little bit healthier, perhaps you take the stairs or you walk to the shops instead of taking the car, then that's great. You don't need to be running a marathon. And if you do run a marathon, you don't need your next marathon to be sub 2 hours, and you don't need your next marathon to be in the Sahara. I think knowing when enough is enough for you is probably one of the most important metrics of satisfaction and happiness. You know, the person who has enough is the person who wants for nothing else, who doesn't feel envy, who doesn't feel jealousy perhaps, and who doesn't beat themselves up because what they want is over the next hill. They say, the hill I'm sitting on is just fine. Thanks very much.
I love it. Well, thanks for coming on. We're fortunately out of time. I could be chatting with you for a long time. But Matthew, thank you for coming on with us. Are you living in Malta now? Is that where you live?
I'm here all the time.
I've never been.
You're welcome to come and have a beer and talk about football.
Yeah, let's do that. And I will jog around the block up when I get back. All right, thank you, Matthew. The book's available on our website. Cheers, Matthew. The book's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's a great book. It's called Get an Effing Grip.